Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And we have some Marines back with us. We're in the middle of our series. I hope people are enjoying it. It seems like the response to that first episode was pretty good, John.
Yeah, we're having a bunch of people hit us up on Instagram about it. I think I just posted I just posted something about it with people to say, when's round two? So here we go, round two.
Yeah, exactly. But due to scheduling issues, we're recording this a day later than we normally do. So we're actually recording and releasing on the same day, which is not typical for us. But hopefully next week we'll get to record this the day before and we'll get it out the first thing in the morning like we normally do. But until then, we are back with Jacob. What's happening, brother?
Oh, you know, got done with deer hunting. It was a good season. Got a bunch of the younger kids their first deer, so that was good. Had to use some of my skills I've learned through everybody else. I mean, I missed the first three times as I was running out about 300 in front of us after the first kid hit it, but then I eventually hit it. So, you know, accuracy by volume.
Yeah, I think we covered that that's your favorite strategy mm-hmm. in the last time we talked. For me, the first time I ever actually had to kill a deer was not on a hunting trip as a kid. It was actually on patrol. It was a vehicle versus deer. I worked in a pretty rural area. I had a, you know, city area, but rural outside of that. And the deer would just come down every spring and just get hit all the time. So we'd have to go out and put them out of their misery and stuff like that. That was the first time I ever killed one. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We are actually joined, not Patrick. Patrick was unable to make it tonight due to circumstances beyond his control, but Carrie is filling in. What's up, Carrie?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And you served with Jacob and Patrick as well. And you were there during all of this, debauchery and nonsense and shenanigans, I take it.
Yes, I was. Lieutenant Madden was, he was our platoon commander, and I was a gunner in one of the trucks that he commanded. So that's where I was at.
Okay. So why don't you give us a little bit about your background so people kind of know where you're coming from as far as how you ended up in the Marine Corps and how long you'd been in when we catch up to our story.
Yeah, so I'm from small town Texas. You know, 80% of the Marine Corps is, right, Jacob? That's kind of an old story. I was going to junior college. I say I was going to junior college. I really wasn't. That's kind of why I joined. mainly just sitting on the couch watching my friends go to college.
Enrolled.
Right. I was enrolled and wasn't doing anything with my life, so I joined kind of spontaneously. Wasn't a lifelong dream. It wasn't spurred on by anything. I just felt like a turd and I needed to do something. So, so I joined up, got everything. I ended up at 3-7 with Jacob as a machine gunner through that first deployment. And then after that first deployment, went on to a sniper platoon. But I only did a total of 4 years and just the two deployments. Jacob, you only did two, correct?
I did both deployments and then I had 5 years because you guys all deserted me. I was one of those idiots. Right. Yeah.
Oh, you re-upped?
No, I didn't re-up. When I joined, I had a 5-year contract at a 5-3. And so, yeah, everybody else, I had to say goodbye to everybody with all the amazing barracks parties as we had. It's good times.
And then there was one.
And then there was one.
Yeah. Now, you know, what's interesting is I did some research, you know, in the interim, and you're the 3-7 is pretty well known. And you guys have, I mean, that from what I was reading, you guys have a long and storied history of shit.
Yeah. You know, when we were getting done out of SOI, you know, the infantry training and everything, and they were kind of divvying everybody up into their respective units, you know, hey, you're going here, you're going here. We really had no idea, but I had heard of like 3-5, 3-7, but I didn't know, you know, in detail the history and stuff like that. And we didn't know till I didn't know until I got to 3-7 the history of, you know, combat deployments and stuff like that. So it was pretty
cool. Yeah, and if, for the audience, if they wanted to look it up, what we're talking about is the 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. So you can look up the when they say 3-7, it's 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. You can look them up. It is literally a laundry list of holy shit.
Like, the whole ordeal is whenever you say 3-7, everybody responds, no shit. And it's no shit, 3-7. And that's because throughout the years, especially throughout when they were pushing through Iraq and everything else, and then going into Afghanistan, the whole joke was, is like, oh, you guys, where are you guys going next? Oh, well, back to Iraq or whatever. And they'd be like, oh, no shit. So that's where the whole kind of joke came from. And then another documentary that's actually going to be coming out here is all about the only one I knew from 3-7 prior to getting there was Dunham, the first Medal of Honor recipient since the Jason Dunham. He was Kilo 4-2, 3-7 when he got the Medal of Honor there in Iraq, and they're doing a whole documentary on him called The Gift. That's coming up here. So if you look up on Facebook or Instagram, it's Kilo 4-2, and they're doing that whole ordeal, and it's going to be an amazing deal about the first medal of first Marine to receive the Medal of Honor since Vietnam. Jumped on a hand grenade and everything else. So yeah, that's our. They used to make us bow down to his wall locker that they still had there at the unit. at Kilo. Yeah, that like yeah.
You gotta love your
tradition. It wasn't hazing; it was building character.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Exactly. Well, you know, what's funny is as I was looking at that, and I was looking at the reputation that 3-7 has, John. You know what I'm talking about. You know, we always talk about on the show. We say, you know, you may not have served in the same part of the military, or you may not, you know, you may have been a firefighter and not a cop, or a cop and not a firefighter, or whatever. But we all have similar experiences because we all are kind of doing similar, you know, work. And I was thinking about the 3-7's reputation is a bit like when somebody mentions, you know, John, like somebody mentions, oh, he works for such and such police department, and you'll hear cops go, oh, fuck, they shoot people. Yeah. Like, even within large departments, if you work a specific area, they go, oh, fuck, they shoot people. Like, that's true. You know, so
it's true.
It's very true.
All about hearts and minds. Two in the chest.
Two in the heart and one in the mind. When last we left our heroes, so let's pick up where we left off. You guys had just started pushing into the wadi, right? You're going house to house. They basically told you, clear it out. And you said, of what? And they said, yes. and from what I recall, it was the as you're just before you're making this push into the wadi, you're just basically seeing people pack up their donkeys. None of which, for the listener who asked, at this point we don't have a flaming donkey yet.
But he commandeered a donkey in Sangin. But that's later on. And then made it almost all 15 patrols before he got shot in the head. That was really disappointing. But yeah. So essentially, before we showed up, we'll basically start right there right before we showed up that day prior, and I'll let Kerry introduce his side of the deal, what he was going through before we showed up that night on Blade Hill and started the push.
Yeah. So, did you already explain, you have to help me out, Jacob. Some of the parts in my mind are missing. I remember the big picture. So I believe we were done with Delarom, and Musakala was the next step. So we established CP Hill over there. And they were getting us, you know, the overall plan, what's going to happen, how we're going to clear it. You know, we're going to wait on Kilo. They're going to go down the sides and we're going to go right up the chute with the big guns, supporting them, you know. That was before
that
we
planned out well.
Yeah, but really didn't go as planned. going down the middle, it was, you know, we were going to go down this giant wadi, was the Musakala wadi, and Kilo was going to clear the sides. So this giant wadi, this giant dry riverbed, we were going to utilize for the truck teams, and try to support everybody in the middle. We didn't know, but the whole wadi was filled with IEDs, and just everybody ended up. Pretty much everybody ended up running over IEDs every day.
Patrick said he got the pressure plate patty.
Pressure plate patty, yeah, there it is. You know, and, looking back on it, it was like, at the time, we thought he was nuts, you know, but looking back on it, you realize what a good leader he was and the initiative he took, and which is probably part of the reason, you know, pressure plate patty got his name. But he was always quick to react. And I think that, you know, it paid off more than it did not. Ended up running over a bunch of IDs and stuff like that. But Jacob, were you guys there when Bailey and the Bailey thing happened?
That was the day prior. So Bailey, okay, by the way, so this whole episode, if we could dedicate it to Bailey.
Yeah. When you guys get to the dedication portion, it's yours.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Because, former Navy chief in the Navy, straight up guy went to boot camp, went to SOI with us.
So he was like an E6, E7 in the Navy, and decided he wanted to do something more. He switched over, cross-deck to the Marine Corps. Of course, when you do that from the Navy, he went all the way back down to an E3. But he understood that, and he wanted to go and get out there in the field and get boots on ground, which is, you know, he's a hell of a guy for doing that. You know what I mean? Not knocking anything that E6, E7s in the Navy's do, but he just wanted to do, he felt like more. So he's a really good dude, really nice, really humble for his age and his experience in the military. He came right into our team and immediately just started asking everybody, hey, train me up. I want to be more proficient on the 50. I want to be more proficient on the Mark 19. And it was just totally receptive of everything. And it was pretty cool. So we were on CP Hill in Musakala. And I guess the day before, we were probably establishing just what was out there or getting our trucks out in the wadi and getting familiar with the area. I don't quite remember. But we were in the wadi and we had gotten shot at. Okay, up to this point, nobody on Cat White Alpha had ever gotten shot at. So we're all fresh, including our seniors, most of our seniors. Everybody was extremely, extremely fresh. We took a few sniper shots, you know, marksman shots here and there on our trucks, on our turrets. So we're kind of on edge, first time experiencing any of that. We got a little bit close to one tree line one day, and the dismounts of Cat Red were already out there. We were supporting them. One single shot rang out, and then the bunch of shots rang out. You know, dismounts came out, you know, just ran straight towards the tree line. That's what they do. And that's when Bailey got hit in the face. It was that single shot. And that's when everybody, it was kind of the first gunfight experience for a lot of us. And it was just wild, you know, for that to be your first experience and Bailey go down like that and everything else. So that's what happened the day before. Yeah,
there was no breaking in period.
Not really. Not anything other than the occasional pop shot, you know. I remember the first time something ever hit near me. I was eating a bowl of chili mac. I just sat back down in my turret.
And I mean, which senior did you fight for that one?
Yeah, seriously, dude. Yeah, they weren't rat fucked yet. And it just felt like someone just hit my turret with a sledgehammer. It was so loud. I'm like, what the hell is that? You know, who's throwing rocks at our trucks? You know, I look up and there's a bullet hole up there. Oh shit. Here we go. This is real.
It's interesting because how many times have we heard that, John?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's almost very, very similar stories.
Very like the first time you go, well, here it is.
Yeah.
Looks like I didn't get dressed up for nothing.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm here. John, so why not?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the first experience. The thing I remember most about that day was Bailey, of course, and Wagner, our Corman Wagner, probably one of the bravest dudes I've ever known. I mean,
does not give a shit. Like literally, he would. He did that multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah, and several people had already run over IEDs in this wadi. That's why it blew my mind. And like I said, none of us had experienced this before. And after running over several IDs and then this fight happened, Bailey goes down. Wagner is probably 75 yards down the wadi and just without thinking, just gets out and starts running straight towards the truck, you know, not tiptoeing or anything. He's just hauling ass, you know? And I'm like, shit, man, my butthole just puckered watching him. You know, I'm just waiting on him. I'm waiting on him to step on one, you know, going over there. He just head down, took care of it. He did good work too. I believe he kept him alive until he got to the bird. And I think they lost him on the bird. Wow. But that was his first. I believe that was his first. So yeah, Wagner. I was glad to have Wagner after that day, you know. Shit, I'm glad Wagner's on our team.
Right.
Yeah.
So later that night, we go back up to CP Hill for our debrief, I guess you would call it. Our company commander, Captain Calvin, he looks at all of us and he says, you know, nope, nobody's getting hurt again. You know, do what you got to do to make yourself more proficient. If you got to take some things off to move better, to move faster, do it. You know, we established some of our own little ROEs. You know, I'm pretty sure he's still in the Marine Corps. I don't want to get him in trouble. But, you know, we loosened up some ROEs, and he was like, nobody else is getting hurt. That's it. You know, you guys do what you got to do, and that's it, you know.
Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Right, right. So when Kilo showed up, I'm sure, you know, they were well briefed on what had happened. And they adopted the same mindset. And from then on, it was game on, and
and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had said this is in 2010?
Yeah, 2010.
Okay. So out of curiosity, not even on a side note, but when I was in Afghanistan, it was in 2008. And as far as ROEs were concerned, I mean, there was none really for the most part. And
the whole part is like Madden brought up on this last, on the last podcast was the fact that it was that big push that they started dropping more and more guys off, because all the guys that were out there in 2009 that we would have random squad leaders show up at the barracks and all his boots and seniors and everybody else that weren't, everybody, even squad leaders and team leaders. We'd meet up with some of the 2-7 guys, which the 2-7 guys, if you don't know, they took the most up to that point in 2010, or sorry, yeah, right there before in 2008, they took the most KIA since Vietnam in a single unit. They got dropped off in Helmand Province as guinea pigs. So they had a platoon. Yeah.
So I guess my question is more along the lines of, you know, when you guys are going into country or right before you guys get into country, are they giving you all these rules you have to abide by?
Yeah.
We're
getting dropped off at Leatherneck and we're getting a PowerPoint, death by PowerPoint.
Yeah.
So we were getting those.
Once you get out there, you kind of establish your own,
Right. Okay.
Depending on who's around you.
Makes sense.
Depends on the area you go into. Because
so Kilo shows up.
Yeah.
And once Kilo shows up after the incident with Bailey and all, and kind of everything goes to shit, then you guys are tasked with this push into the Wadi, and you're part of that with Patrick. So you're basically right next to him the whole time at that point.
Right. Yeah. I'm with Cat Alpha. So Pat was, in charge of all of Cat Alpha, which you had Cat White Alpha and then Bravo. So Alpha was four trucks and Bravo was four trucks. Part of the time Alpha and Bravo, both teams were in the Wadi. A lot of the times they had Cat Red, which was the other eight truck team. I forget the name of their platoon commander. They were supplementing Kilo, I believe.
Cat Red commander, that's the guy that, what do you want to say?
Prince of Cats.
We'll tell that story. He didn't like the sight of blood. Because Cripe, good old Cripe's ass.
Yeah, that was Pat's really good friend. But so I was with Pat and the whole Cat White. We were pushing through the Wadi and pretty much stayed there for as long as Kilo needed us, which was, you know, a long time. And we would just get resupplied from CP Hill. They would run food out to us and stuff. So we slept in the trucks and, you know, the whole time that this whole push was going down. We eventually got out of the trucks, as I'm sure Jacob did. Did you explain all that, Jacob? The whole.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, to, no. Yeah. So we were essentially, once we got dropped off there and like we took fire coming in and everything else. And so we get dropped off. And like I said, we spent the one night on that top of that hill at CP Hill, Blade Hill, as eventually been named and everything. And so we leave there the next morning and they're like, hey, just start going north here. All right. Hey, clear through this bazaar. Obviously, pissing on an IED doesn't help. And then we kept pushing north. We got to this point where Cat Red had came up on our right side. They made it through the Wadi, came up, and secured Cat Red Castle. And they had established there. Right behind there was Blade Hill. Or not Blade Hill, sorry. That was wrong. It wasn't Blade Hill. It was ended up being called Bunker Hill. Because when we got there in the late afternoon, Bunker Hill hadn't been cleared yet. And Bunker Hill was just another old Russian outpost. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having to clear Bunker Hill. Didn't have a name for it, so we just named it Bunker Hill. And when we came up there on that, we came up out of the main village down the center. And where the Wadi runs, to the right, and the village is to the left. So we had to go through the village, clear through everything. We were out of water, food, everything else at that point. And so we got up to that point. We cleared through on Bunker Hill, got everything cleared out. They had tunnel systems and everything else going in there. The entire ridge line over Bunker Hill had freaking, how do you say that? Dug in positions. Everything. It had everything. Okay. Like we were doing tunnel rat shit going into Bunker Hill. Yeah.
So it was fortified
Hey, drop all your gear. What's your birthday? Okay, never mind. You're just going. Drop your gear. Here's a pistol. Good luck. And so we go into the bunker, clear it all out. Spent the night there. And that first night I come across the first night we're sitting there and we're out of food. We're out of water. We just filled up at the well 3 miles back. We're not going to go walking back to go get refilled on water. So they're like, hey, go out there. Cat White's sitting there about 500 meters from you. So they send me and a fire team as the boot, and they sent one fire team leader out there to go get water and food. And they're like, hey, just watch for IEDs. Oh, thanks. So that's the first time I saw Carrie since, oh God, that would have been like time, before we deployed. Yeah, I know.
So you guys just kind of run into each other like, oh, hey, what's up? I haven't seen you in a dog's age.
Good to see you still alive, you know, cool.
Yeah. Well, the first thing, come out there to his truck, and he has water and food in the back. So they give us a couple cases, just enough that we were, everybody in the platoon for third platoon, we had enough MREs to split food and water. And Kerry, the first thing he says to me is that the machine gunner, he went to, how do you put that? It's during SOI, when you go through the machine gun side, one of the guys that's with me is Evers. And freaking, he's just like, hey, tell that fucker I already got two. Fuck him. And gives me the water and food.
Yeah, I went to machine gun. Yeah, SOI, I learned how to be a machine gunner. I think Evers might have been there. We were friends shortly after. Something like that. Just trying to make sure everybody sent a message to Evers, make sure he was in good spirits and everything. You know, hey, fuck you. You know, I got something you didn't.
Like next time. Like a good brother should.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's just good to see somebody, you know, through all that. And it was just like hot and heavy. And then all of a sudden, oh God, there's my good friend. You know, hey, how's it going?
Right.
What have you guys been up to, you know?
Right. <Yeah. laughs> I'm glad to see somebody I know is alive and well.
Yeah.
So you guys get this Bunker Hill. Is this on the outskirts of the Wadi, or is this right?
No, it's like right on the outskirts of the Wadi on the east side. Because so the only, at this point, it's not Kilo Company, it's Kilo 3. It's only 3rd Platoon on one side. They only brought in one platoon for ground ass. So because, no offense, but Cat White and Cat Red didn't have enough dismounts. So we needed more
for a truck team.
People on the ground. So that's the reason we got brought in. So Kilo 3 gets brought in. We hit that first night, go to sleep, wake up the next morning like I was talking about last time. Kilo, second squad goes walking out that next morning. And that night, the only thing we had was that whole first day, the only thing we had was that IED. And the next, that evening, is the brief burst of gunshot when we hit the top of the hill going towards Bunker Hill, going towards the Cat Red Castle. That next morning, second squad, as they take off and they're just walking up the side of the hill, just get lit the fuck up. And it starts that whole second day.
Right.
All day. It was literally, we split it up that we'd have one squad going down the center, left side of the Wadi, so east side of the Wadi. We'd have one squad on the far left side, one squad on the far right side. And it was just literally fire maneuver all day until about 2 or 3. And we took a break and let Cat Red and Cat White catch up with us, kind of. But then, thanks to Cat White, they hit a couple more IEDs, so they couldn't. And then Cat Red, that was right behind us, they were, how do you put that? They tried to drive off, and they went about 50 meters and hit 3 different IEDs.
It was hard trying to keep up with them because they were shitting and getting, and they were maneuvering. And us as vehicles are trying to keep up with them, trying to stay parallel and trying to support them with the guns that they needed us to, you know, hit some buildings with Mark 19 or something before they went in or whatever. I mean, it was just hard to keep up with them, you know, because you don't want to slow them down. And then you're hitting IEDs, and then the wrecker would come get your truck, and the wrecker would hit the IEDs. And then Cat Red would try to supplement you, and then they would hit 2 or 3 IEDs, you know, just all day IEDs and trying to keep up with Kilo 3. It was pretty nuts.
Air support at any point during this.
What's that?
What about air support?
We had not, up until coming up to, the videos that I sent you guys and everything that you have access to the hard drive. That's where the whole HIMARS, the A-10s coming in on the tree line. Mm-hmm. These fuckers ended up pinning us in a, how do you put that? It's like a L-shaped wadi ridge line where we came down thinking we were going to be able to get hillside before they hit us again. And so we get hit and then we start taking contact, Kilo 3. We're out there alone because they're all taking care of, like, trying to get trucks replaced, everything else. So we start taking contact. It originally comes from the north, start getting lit up. All right, got cover. Yeah, start engaging, picking out targets, everything else. These guys riding north in front of us on the other side of the ridge line as it goes through L-shape, they built a whole trench line, and they had blankets over them and everything else, and they were just shooting out from the trench line. And then to the east, or sorry, to the west, they had a whole tree line, multiple compounds with murder holes where they were just shooting out of. And then all of a sudden, then we start taking contact from behind. They came up behind us because they knew all the trucks were out. So they literally came up the ridge line, came behind us, and started engaging us from the top. And they just started lighting us up, going through it all. And so at this point, me, I'm engaging to the north. We have a squad behind us that's trying to take care of those guys behind us. And then you hear over the radio that freaking, hey, no, cat white and cat red, we're coming, we're coming. And this is when our, at this point, Shadow 2, they made, like, what was it? It was like over a, like, what, like a 1,000 meter run to come help support us.
They did that a lot. It's hard to say. It's hard to say how much they ran because they did that a lot. You know, a lot of people called on them and they answered the call every single time. It was nuts.
They were watching the far west side, or sorry, the far, the far west side of the Wadi, and they came over to help us because the rest of Kilo Company was coming in the next day.
Yeah.
And so they were like making sure everything was clear over there by football and potato.
Yep.
Where, you know, they drove through earlier and they realized it was all fortified, everything else.
Right.
And so they were making sure everything else was clear on that side on, that day two. And we got, at that point it was like 9 hours in and we were all exhausted. We were out of food. We were out of water. So we called in everything. We had two A-10s come on station, blew apart a whole tree. Yeah.
Staff Sergeant Ortiz, who was with us.
Oh, yeah.
He had gone Papa to JCAC. Yeah, Papa.
Captain White Papa. Papa White.
That was his call sign, Cat White Papa. White Papa. He had gone to JTAC, a JTAC course before we left for deployment.
And JTAC for the audience is?
It allows you to call stuff in, but does not give you the signature.
You're the on-ground liaison between the guys on the ground and the air support. So you're talking directly to the air support. You're telling them, hey, we need this drop on this building.
So White Papa is your comms with air support.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. He was,
which luckily we had him and V that were able to talk to.
Yeah. So him being fresh from the course and realizing what's going to go down, you know, after this first day, he just put himself up on what hill was that? He positioned himself on a hill on the side of the Wadi where he could see pretty much the whole battlefield. And from then on out, he was shit hot the entire time, just dropping air for everyone everywhere.
They popped up on that west or east side, and they came over the hill, and he just stopped there, and they set up there. And then if you go directly north of there, about 1,000 meters, that's where Sniper Hills is at.
Yeah.
Where they raised the flag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, so we got to that point, which we were getting hit on all sides, everything else. So we started calling in everything. So we had a whole, couple 500s drop, and then we did a whole call for fire with HIMARS on that whole trench line that they had dug in.
That was that big. Yeah, that was the video. You showed them the video.
Yeah, right. Tree flying.
That was.
Yeah, that'll be the next one I put up after this episode. I'll put that up in the thread on our briefing room on the website. I'll put that video in this thread for the people that are members.
Yeah, so we had that whole deal where we had the call for fire with HIMARS where they had one hit. Okay, good hit. Fire for effect. All right, and then we had the A-10s on station. And the A-10s, there was about 16 different dudes shooting at us from this tree line. And when Patino came walking up at one point, they had come over, started dropping dudes. And then right when they started dropping the, what is that? The 82. Yeah. 82. Is it 82 Russian? Yeah. 82. Because we had 81s and they always.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Similar to the 80s.
It kills people.
Yeah.
So they started walking in borders on us. So the sniper team immediately takes off and they go back up on what we called Sniper Hill and started running towards them. Like they ran directly through all the fire.
Yeah.
And took out the mortar team, then came back.
Yeah. So
the point
is you're gonna wanna get someone from that sniper platoon after on one of these episodes.
It's going to be coming up here.
They were getting after.
A couple of different guys. Yeah. I've been talking to a couple of them, with the jobs they're at. We have to do the nameless figure. Yeah.
So anyway, Kerry, so you were saying that you guys you're part of the truck team.
Yep.
You know, like there's the Alpha and the Bravo, two truck teams. And then Jacob, your unit is boots on the ground advancing and you guys are trying to keep up with them because they're just going. And this is when everything goes to shit and you guys are getting surrounded, shot at from every angle. Is that because your truck team was taken out by all these IEDs and they were vulnerable?
It probably had something to do with it. You know, they weren't stupid by any means. You know, they knew what they were doing to a certain extent. So I'm sure that had something to do with it. They had their hills that they were set up on and they could watch the whole battlefield as well that we knew of. So that probably had a lot to do with it. You know, they had a giant hill to the extreme north. I don't know if we named that hill, but it had their own support weapon systems on it. You know, they had a Dishka up there. They had something
that freaking anti-aircraft gun.
Something comparable to our Mark 19, but I think it was like a 20 millimeter.
It's something that they couldn't figure out the timing on because that right. one.
It would hit around our trucks all day long, but it would never hit our trucks. And it was like these small explosions, like a Mark 19 explosions, a little bit smaller. So they had their own, you know, command and control up there. So I'm sure that had a lot to do with it.
Well, because I remember that night Ortiz took out I forget what he took it out with. I think it ended up being a 500-pound bomb. They ended up taking I forget the name of the vehicle, but they had it in a car. One of the cars that they had the Dishka in, and it was just moving the whole time. And then they had that other gun that they couldn't figure out the timing that the gun, which what I got told was a old Russian anti-aircraft gun from the 80s. So like, it's like a flat gun.
That would make sense. That would make sense. Cause it was just these explosions, random explosions. You're like, what the hell was that? You know?
Cause those, that well, you told us to go, Cat White told us to go to. On the second day there, when we were taking a lot of contact, we were walking up from the side of that hill and me and Frixel were walking up the hill and it just thunk, 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 thunk. And we just stand there and then all the rounds start exploding in the ground.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the? And so we just take off sprinting up this hill and
it's fucking dark arc out here.
It's like, God damn it. Not again.
What was that?
So once you guys have this air support that comes in on the second day, does it pretty much eliminate, for the most part, what you need eliminated for you guys to continue to advance or at least hunker down for the night?
Kind of. Once we took out a lot of the positions, everything kind of went quiet for a while. Everything went dead. And then once Shadow 2 came back and raised the videos on there, the flag raising deal, these guys knocked down a pole, which ended up being their icon power.
Yeah, their icon chatter, which is the the chatter that they operate on. Taliban, they all operate their radios off of the icon chatter. And that poll, I guess, ended up being for their icon chatter. So it was just that much sweeter when they put the flag on it. And they tore it down and put the flag on it and put it back up. Yeah.
We found that out the next day when they were trying to chat. Yeah.
So that's the end of the second day when the flag goes up?
The end of the second day, as they start raising the flag, everything had been quiet. Like, they had kind of done a couple pop shots here, a couple bursts here, there, and there. Nothing crazy, though. Nothing like we were experiencing all day. Like, Everything pretty much went quiet there. When they came back and raised that flag, everything kind of just started going off again. all of them just started, kind of doing their little bursts and everything else. I think it kind of pissed them off. And they were just kind of to the point where, it was nothing accurate. It was, compared to the fire we were taking earlier, you kind of learn who's actually shooting at you.
Yeah.
To compare to, hey, I think they're in that area, and I'm just going to shoot. And they started doing that again, and we were just all laughing about it. Yeah, at that point, me and Frixel had a watermelon that I ran out 50 meters away from where we were, just to grab in the garden, just to grab a watermelon or two, because we were starving and we needed food. And so we're sitting there watching HIMARS come in and eating food and watching the American flag get raised over a valley. And it was beautiful.
Nice.
It was awesome.
So as you get through that second day, you're now, Carrie, you're sleeping in the trucks. Is that
right? Yeah. So everybody but the driver and the gunners will get out and supplement anybody on the ground that needs to supplement, or, if you need to run some chow up to the kilo three guys, anybody other than the driver and the gunner will get out and go do that kind of stuff. And, at the end of the day, they all kind of just ended up staying out there, and they were like, screw this, I don't want to be in the truck anymore, So just the driver and the gunner, we're listening on our radios, we're all boots. So we're like, okay, well, I guess we're driving the trucks now, So we're just, they call us on the radio, hey, move up so many meters or whatever. We'd keep up with them on our GRS maps or whatever. Isn't that what they were called, GRS maps? The maps of the building numbers and everything.
That one in your truck, the little GPS deal on the screen.
No, the hard copy.
The hard copy. Yeah.
Or the blue something, Blue Force Tracker. That's what it was. So we stayed. Yeah, we stayed in the Wadi, and we'd sleep out there. I don't know if it was the second day or the first day, but it was wild because we just got left out there. Not abandoned, but just kind of got left out there. And, just waiting, I'm waiting, who wants support, who wants fucking support for the Mark, with the Mark 19, I'm just waiting. And we got kind of lit up with that Dishka, a couple rounds ripped through our fucking truck, and then one ripped through both toolboxes in the back, and it caught the incendiary part of it, caught the tool bag on fire, so the whole back of the truck went up, all the plastic water bottles and everything else was just fucking flaming. And then here we are, fucking boots. I'm like, oh, fuck, what do we do? We're going to die. So
I'm going to get blamed for this.
We're out there with, water bottles and shit trying to put this fire out. And anyways, we get it all put out and everything, but it was pretty funny. But that's where we were until we also got out of the trucks. I don't remember why or where we drove our trucks to, but we ended up in this compound with Fry and however many guys, a whole squad or someone. I don't remember. I just remember killing a bunch of chickens.
We had a bunch of Kilo 3 guys on that. Well, obviously all the Kilo 3 was on that side. And this is where we got the nickname Three Animal, because that first compound you guys met up with us where the blind guy owned it. And yeah. He was just like, yes. So me and Frixel, we were out of, well, obviously we're out of food. We're out of water. This guy has a well in his compound. So we're like, okay, we got water. Now we need to get food. And so me and Frixel walked outside and we ended up finding two goats. And we killed, two goats that night and a couple chickens. And we just literally put it in one giant pot. We just skinned it, did all that fun stuff. I still remember, who was it? It was you and Warman.
Warman.
Yeah. Yeah, it came up. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. They were like, oh, yeah, we know how to clean stuff. And I'm like, yeah, same here. All right, let's get this stuff cleaned. Let's throw it all in the pot. Freaking Pena and a bunch of the other guys from Kilo 3, they raided the garden earlier and got a bunch of cucumbers, salt, everything else. They raided this whole house and they found a, well, that one was salt. The first one we found was definitely not salt. it was definitely not salt. found the other bag though. So we got that one. So we got a whole bag of salt and so we just started cooking. And so then we just kept pushing. And each day it was just kind of funnier and funnier because Cat White and Kilo 3, we were just kind of, hey, we're just going to keep going compound to compound. Hey, we're taking over for the night. And, you guys don't have any food? All right, we're not going to eat your chickens, but we're going to eat everybody else's chickens. And at that last compound where we pushed furthest north, which I think the unit north of us was either 1-2 or 2-1. I forget. Yeah. It's some kind of combination. It was a 2-1?
I think.
I always. So they were directly north of us pushing the same way.
Yeah.
And so we imagine, get to that. Yeah.
Oh, so imagine, Jesus. A day before.
Yeah.
Or 2 days before, nobody's experienced any of this, and we're all fresh. And then all this stuff is just happening, this chaos and shit. And here we are like 2 or 3 days into it, and we're just completely 180. You know, we're all a bunch of skinny, pale, salty fucking...
As we're recovering from dysentery, and everybody's just like...
We're all shitting our pants from dysentery. drinking out of the wells and stuff, and we're running around shirtless, throwing rocks at chickens and stealing goats at night, you know. So it was pretty funny. It happened pretty quick, the transition, if you will.
Yeah,
that
right.
Transition. Well, because that day three, the day, the day after the big firefight when we called everything in, that's the next day when snipers pushed out, and I'll let other guys better than me tell that story. But obviously the guy that saved our ass the day prior lost his life. But then when we continued the push, that day three after the CASVAC and everything went off, everybody started experiencing symptoms like just randomly everything coming out one way or the other. And as we continued to push, we just didn't matter. Like Madden said, we had guys on IVs walking. We had guys on IVs in trucks and the turrets. It was just whatever we had to do to survive. And
I was out of doxycycline, and I remember sleeping in the truck, and I didn't know what I had. I ended up having dysentery twice, but this was the first time. And we were sleeping in the trucks, and I would just wake up in the middle of the night with just shit all down my pants. And I remember it very vividly. It smelled like Play-Doh. It felt like really salty Play-Doh.
That's what it smelled like. Really salty.
And I'm like, can I get some fucking pants? Like, where the hell do I get pants out here? You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? So someone found me a pair of pants somewhere. I don't know. Thank God, because I would have had to sleep in it and walk around in it and all that kind of shit. But, yeah. The dysentery was very, it was going around very rapidly.
Oh, no, yeah. It spread like
wildfire. We've heard the dysentery was very real.
Oh, well,
so now how many days in are you guys before we get talking about shit again?
Oh yeah, with dysentery, everybody started getting hit with the dysentery about day three, night of day three going into day four.
Okay. So now we're in we're into day four. Everybody spent the night shitting themselves, and you guys have pushed how far?
God, maybe from Blade Hill. What would that been, like 6 miles, maybe?
Maybe. And what's the maybe. Total distance you're trying to cover?
No, we didn't have a mission to. Yeah,
I didn't know at the time that 2-1 or 1-2 was up north of us. But
we didn't know until day three when we started seeing them hit IEDs.
Yeah, I didn't know the entire time until it was all done and like several years ago, probably. But
right. That's my machine gun that was north. Aiming near me. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I didn't know how far north our AO went, and 2-1's AO came down south, but that was probably the goal, to get somewhere around there.
Okay.
Well, we were pushing north. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off there, but yeah, that's like the whole ordeal is like, we didn't have an AO at that point. They were planning the invasion of Marja going up, because from Musakala, it goes north towards Marja. Mm-hmm. Then you go south.
When you say Marja, when you say Marja, are you saying, is it also Marga?
No, Marja. Marja. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So the whole time, because after we got split up as a unit, half our unit went up towards to help support the invasion into Marja, and the other half got sent down to Sangin.
Right.
And we were trying to cut off, from what I understand, we were trying to cut off the whole northern egress going into Sangin Valley, which Sangin Valley is the number one opium producer in the world.
Right. So just trying to sabotage and cut off, you know, rat lines and supply routes and shit like that.
Right. Okay. So
because the only power source down there is the Kajaki Dam, which is just, that was the whole goal. Kajaki Dam is something the Russians built back in the 1980s, and that is run by lamp cords.
Right. So you guys are fighting dysentery and the enemy on day four.
Yeah, well, day three. Trying to day three going into day four, yeah.
Right. It's just you said that the dysentery didn't hit until like the night of the third day. So now you guys are pushing again on the fourth day. And is it the same? Is it the same kind of thing, Kerry, where the ground troops are advancing faster than necessarily you guys can? You're trying to keep up, or did the shits slow them down a little bit?
No, I don't think the shits slowed anything down. I mean, generally that happened. This whole game of IED and trying to keep up with Kilo 3 animals, quite literally. It was the same story every day, really. I mean, there would be times where nobody progressed very much because they were fighting, and it would slow everybody down. And so everybody would be able to get online, if you will, and parallel with each other, and that would be good. Then it was time to advance. It was, you know, there goes Kilo 3, you know, pucker your butt. We got to move down the wadi a little bit, drive down a little bit more. I think I was the only truck out of a lot of trucks that never ran over an IED in that wadi. I have no idea how, but I'm pretty sure everybody ran over an IED. Yeah.
Your truck was the last one at the end.
No, I was third. I think I was third, second or third. I was right in the middle. I just got lucky.
That is pretty lucky, especially considering the amount of trucks you guys were going through, it sounds like.
Oh, it was insane. I mean, it was just a constant resupply of Motor T vehicles from, I guess it would have been from Delarom to where we were at, just back and forth, bringing vehicles, towing vehicles, dealing with their own fucked up vehicles. It was really dynamic, actually. It went from zero to a lot of different things going on, you know, with Kilo 3 getting in the shit, snipers getting in the shit, calling for fire, trucks trying to support, but running over IEDs, and then our support trucks running over IEDs. It was a lot, you know?
And at this point, the objective is still just keep going?
Just, I mean, more or less at that point, it was keep going and just kill. you know, let's just, we're going to go and we're going to fuck them up until somebody says stop. Really?
Okay.
Yeah. And it was, yeah. There was a good rhythm and flow after a few days, you know, everybody started working well together. When it came to, you know, Kilo 3, communicating with weapons, communicating to hire, and it really got into a rhythm, you know, support, move, assault, air support, everything. And then there for a minute, it got really smooth. Yeah. It was just, let's get it, you know.
Like immediately, like, it got to the point, like he said, it just got to that smooth point by the time they would, when we first started engaging them, they would maneuver faster than we could.
Yeah.
Like, cause they knew what they were doing. So they would fire from one position, move to the next. By the time we maneuvered on that next position, they would hit us again from a different angle.
And by that time, anybody innocent wasn't around. So if you saw anybody, it was like, you know, they've got a gun.
You know? Yeah, right. 90% chance anybody you see at that point is a bad guy.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, and those fuckers, like, they started doing that where they would try to drop their guns after shooting at us and try to walk out in front of us.
Yeah.
And then circle back around and get their guns and try to hit us from behind. Mm-hmm. And so we caught on to that and we started leaving trucks/people behind, whether it was Shadow 2 or the trucks. And they would just take them out.
As soon as they pick the gun back up.
Yeah. So they would circle back around and we'd call out the building. And they realized it. So, yeah, it was kind of one of those deals. And then we hit that final compound on the furthest northern side that we pushed. And that was the night that we ended up, you know, killing everything that was, you know, eatable. But before that, we had that whole point where we were pushing on, what was that, day 4 or day 5, and all of us were shitting and puking ourselves, everything else. And Rodney Hill, I'm sure you remember good old Bucktooth Rodney.
Yeah.
he always went commando. And he had torn his pants, his frog bottom pants, on like day 2. And so he tried to sew them up with 550 cord and it didn't work. We started taking contact and this fucker is up on top of a hill shooting. And I get up there and start shooting too. And he just starts screaming bloody murder like he got shot. So I go running over there to check on him. And I'm like, where you hit? No, his balls and dick had dropped out on the fucking rocks and sand that we were shooting at on top of the hill. And he burnt his fucking shaft in his balls on the fucking sand and rocks.
Can't make this shit up.
No, you can't.
So yeah. He literally is screaming because he freaking... Yeah, he got, like, I don't know how that would have been. It would have been second-degree burns because it's technically blisters. Oh, my God. So we get through it. I kick him over, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, Hill, which wasn't the first time I yelled that. Anyway, great guy. He's like that guy with retard strengths that can carry anything. Like, he was carrying a saw, extra 2,000 rounds, plus another JAV missile that we had a guy with that they couldn't use it out there because the clue wouldn't freaking lock into the target because it was too hot out there.
Yeah.
But the clue, yeah. Yeah. So
now, do you get a purple heart for burning your dick on a rock?
He did not. And I'm glad because fuck that man. Love me to death, but Jesus Christ, he made me run extra 50 meters with dysentery as I'm shitting out my ass, because he literally just made me jump over the last canal, and I shit everywhere down my leg.
Well, to be fair, if you're going to shit out of somewhere, it's preferably out of your ass.
Right. Yeah, I hope you're shitting out of your ass.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, if anybody deserves a Purple Heart, the guy that burns his penis on a rock in Afghanistan might qualify.
Yeah. Or shits out of his penis. I don't know what.
That's so a whole different medal. It's the purple head, yeah. Not the purple heart.
Purple head.
different kind of dysentery. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but we finally got to the last compound, and it's me and him out there, and we just got to the point where it was zero fucks. Like, we dropped all gear, everything. Half of us weren't carrying our rifle. We were just like, yeah. We were just like, all right, no, if we get shot at this point, we don't give a fuck. We just want food. So I forget who it was. Who was that out of Cat White that had the axe that we were passing around throwing at freaking ducks?
Probably Blakey. He was my he was my machine gunner senior, and he was a big motherfucker. He was, if there was any kind of machine gunner in your mind, any stereotype, that's him, you know, and he was like half Native American. He's from Oklahoma and just naturally fucking huge. So I'm guessing he was the one with the axe. yeah. Being Native American, that's had to have been Blakey.
Plus he had the Tom Selleck mustache.
Mustache. Yeah, he was a man.
Yeah. He had the whole porn star mustache going. Yeah. Like, this guy terrified me just by his mustache. Like, when he started yelling at me about anything, it was just that point where you're like, I haven't met you this entire time, but I'm in Afghanistan and you have a porn star mustache, so I'm going to be terrified because I don't know what's going on.
So I think probably, John, if it's a good time for us to clear up any questions we have, because I think if we're getting to the last compound and there's a big battle at the last compound where you kill everything and its mother, is that about right?
No, it's probably, actually it was actually more along the lines that the unit north of us ended up taking. They basically told us, hey, you guys are pulling back to Blade Hill, and we got to that furthest north point, and they were like, hey, you guys are pulling back. The unit north of you is taking over this entire AO because you guys are going to Sangin. Yeah. And this
whole time at night, you're watching what's going on in Sangin. You can see it clicks away, tracing all night long back and forth. So we're
down south
during the day, and at night we're sitting there looking like, holy fuck, like Sangin's going off, and that's where we're going next. Like, Jesus. You know, so anyway,
that is probably the best place to leave it, because if we're going to tackle that whole portion, so you guys are pushing, going north. You take all this territory, and then they decide to let another team hold it and send you guys to something even worse. Is that about right?
Yeah, right. Nope. Yep. Because, because essentially the funny part was, is like he said, you could see everything going on in Sangin. And once we got back to Blade Hill, which at that point, what, you guys were down to what, one vehicle? Yeah, one vehicle.
So the whole time we're clearing everything in Musa Caleb and the Wadi, they're dealing with their own issues on top of CP Hill, which had been covered in IEDs and they had no idea. And it was set up. I mean, it was control and command on that hill, and nobody just happened to hit any of the IEDs. And so nobody hit any of them until like the second or third day. And so the whole time they were walking around and just all day around these fucking IEDs. And then all of a sudden people started stepping on them and driving on them. And quite a few people got fucked up there on CP Hill, which was like, it just came out of nowhere. Right.
The first 2 days, you guys are fat, dumb, and happy and have no idea you're walking on an improvised minefield.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, and once we got back up there, more guys got hit as we're pulling out. Yeah, that whole video on there is when basically as we're pulling back from Musa Caleb and letting another unit take it over, when we got back to Blade Hill there, and obviously I want to know the – as we were talking about with the whole episode with about Patino, we got a couple of the guys that are going to talk about all that, which was a lot more than what I can't explain our gratitude to him and everything he did for us, and that all the times he covered our asses, and he was dropping guys out from way further than we could see that were shooting at us. And obviously it's the 10-year anniversary, and we did a whole video about him and everything else. These guys, they ran through fire. They ran through everything, the Shadow 2 dudes. And so, like, hopefully this next episode, I'll have it lined up that you guys will be able to have those guys on and talk about that. But I'll let them discuss that. Yeah. Well, but as we, that last night when we got back to Blade Hill, a British convoy came up past us. And we're like, oh, no, we're going down south towards Sangin. And they just got, you could see them as they drove away from us. And they just got lit up. And we're all like, and this guy comes up to us. And I forget who it was. It was one of the higher ups. And he was just like, hey, guys, that's where we're headed next. I'm like, what the? Wait, what?
Giddy up. Here we go.
Yeah. All right.
So you got that going for you, which is nice.
Let's strap on this long one. So here we go.
You guys wanted to dedicate, and I know we talked about him a little bit, but Carrie, why don't you give us all the information for Bailey for your dedication?
Yeah. Corporal Bailey, he ended up, he was Lance Corporal Bailey. Lance Corporal Bailey, he came over to us. Ready to go. I mean, he didn't get to be with us for long, you know. He wanted to make a difference, and he did. He showed up, and he went right to work, and he freaking, you know, threw his nuts out there and was like, you know, let's get it on. I believe when it all happened, he was actually fixing a malfunction on the 50, just to a T. I remember watching him. His truck was right next to me, and I was in my chair watching him, and he looked like a pro. He lit up 50, had a malfunction. Cleared it, ran out of ammo, and he was up out of the turret, reloading the 50. And that's when that all happened. But I mean, he went out like a warfighter. He didn't hesitate to do his job, and he came over and went right to work. So,
now, how old was what was Lance Corporal Bailey's first name, and how old was he?
Bailey, I don't remember how old he was. He was older than all of us. I remember.
He was that old guy that I randomly, the first time I met him, was actually at a barracks party, actually at a barracks fight. We were taking on 311 right across from us. He randomly just came out of his room and just started punching everybody. Did not care. Like, he was just like all about being a Marine. Even after being I swear he was an E7 in the Navy.
Yeah.
And this guy crossed deck and went through boot camp all over again, all the suffering, everything.
Was his name, was it Michael?
Yep.
Yeah, Michael Bailey.
Okay, so he was 29 years old.
Yeah, he was, which was, to us, it was like, fuck, you're old, man.
Yeah, yeah, right. 29's a senior citizen.
Yeah, now that I'm 30, now that I'm 30, I was like, okay, that's not too old. But then again, at that point, I was 20 years old.
Well, we appreciate you guys coming on, and we dedicate this episode to Lance Corporal Michael Bailey. Rest easy, brother. Your life, your sacrifice mattered, as evidenced by Jacob and Carrie dedicating this episode to you. So rest easy. We got it from here. Thanks again for coming back. This is part two. This has been an experiment for us. John and I have never done, we've done, you know, first, you know, part one, part two, kind of a two-parter episodes, but a continuing series like this where we look at the same, you know, the same kind of combat from all these different angles has been really, really fun and interesting so far. Really super kind of intrigued, because if you guys are watching Sangin go off like the shock and awe fireworks spectacular at Disneyland every night, and now you've been through the up to that point your first meat grinder, and now they're telling you that you're gonna go to something that every night you've looked at is even worse, that I mean, what is that like? there's not much you could say except, okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little taste. You're getting a little taste, you know, what you thought was chaotic and crazy. And it was, but it turned out, which you'll find out in the later episodes of Sangin, and that was just a little taste. And Sangin
was the appetizer.
That was the freaking appetizer, and Sangin was the main course, and it was 24/7.
Well, Kerry, you're invited back anytime. You know, if you want to come back on next week, when Jacob comes back with, possibly, Patrick and maybe a couple other people, we'll see. We'd love to have you back. John, do you have anything?
No, you know, I just find it, you know, it's always so fascinating. You know, you guys were there, about 2 or 3 years after me, and, you know, so many experiences were very, very similar. I mean, you know, things that I haven't thought about for years and years and years and years. So you're talking about seeing another place that's getting lit up and you're watching it from clicks away. I could vividly see things like that now, you know, just like, oh, I guess, yeah, we're going there tomorrow. Should be interesting. Yeah. You know, so it's just, I find it fascinating. And, you know, also two different places in Afghanistan, and there's just so many, you know, just so many similarities. And I appreciate you guys coming on and talking about it.
That's super cool. Hey,
no, thanks for having us. It's been great because I've been talking to everybody. I'm like, hey, you remember the stories. I know it's 10 years ago, but hey, just start thinking about it. You got it. Get that hamster rolling.
Yeah, right. Put the hamster back on the wheel and have him do some sit-ups, because
the stuff you've been repressing, I want you to talk about.
Well, none of us are very, very good at the repressing part of it. Usually, we just make a deal with our brain that, we'll kill it with whatever sort of distraction it needs, be it the occasional cocktail and or woman. So, yeah, sometimes, well, people can follow us, on all the social media platforms, they can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And I mean, I guess you could technically follow us on Twitter, but we don't ever tweet. It's a Twitter is a fucking cesspool.
You don't say what?
You know, so you can follow us there. You can go to our website, www.warstoriesofficial.com. That's where you get your t-shirts and the challenge coins and the patches and the hat. Well, the hats aren't on there yet. You'll still have to direct message one of us, if you want to get one of our ball caps. Just because we're trying to figure out before we order a bunch of them and list them on our website, which ones people want the most of. But that's the way you can support us. You can go on, be a patron of the podcast and help us by donating, or you can join our website where you can join the briefing room and subscribe for, it's $1 a month to get in. And that's where you can connect with other people, talk about the episodes, you know, it's got comment threads, and then it's got secured access. So not just anybody can get in there, but once you are in there, we'll share pictures from the episodes or something like that. We just create threads. And then if you guys go in there and you have a particular episode, if you comment on it, we'll see the comment, and John and I can try and answer questions or reach out to the guests that were on that show or, you know, whatever. That's kind of the place to do it. It's super easy. And other than that, I mean, we don't do commercials. We have, if you can believe this, we had somebody reach out to us and they wanted to do, they want us to do commercials for swimwear.
Solid.
I'm going to put my Speedo on again. I mean, Josh Koff, who I had my, fingers in his ass, and saying there, I mean, he wore his Speedo all over to the IW night. So,
yeah. Well, John and I just figured that again wasn't a good fit for this.
Yeah.
You know,
I know several people who would have put them on during the podcast, you know.
100%.
Hey, I have 100% done this podcast in my War Stories Ranger panties, and I'm sure John has too. Especially now that we have to do a lot of them on Zoom nowadays because of the fucking stupid Rona. You guys can't see I'm wearing them right now from the waist. you can support us by getting those kinds of things from us. You know, trying to keep us commercial free. John and I do this because we care about it. But, you know, we also, we also love doing it. You know, it's really fun to get together with guys like Jacob and Carrie. The support from you guys always helps, especially people will send us messages. They'll send us, you know, emails, they'll send us voicemails, and it's always about, you know, how something happened to them that was similar, or, you know, their uncle or their brother served, or, you know, they felt like they were the only one that was thinking this way. And then they hear, you know, John and I alone can do it. Or when we get together with guys like you, we all speak this same language, and it makes the people that are listening that have been there not feel so crazy, not feel so isolated. Like, oh my God, at least I'm not, if I'm crazy, at least there are other people that's just as crazy.
Right.
So
let's all get weird. Let's all be weird together.
There you go. Yeah, damn
right. And you know, let's face it, to the four of us sitting here right now, if the shit hit the fan again and we got that call from the right person that said, you know, grab your gear and let's go, we'd go. Right. I mean, we all loved it. We didn't do it. I've always found that fascinating how, people talk about, you know, anti-war people talk about the soldier this, the soldier that. Yeah. It's tough. It's hard on you mentally, but you sign up for it. And you know, Carrie, you said it when you were talking about getting there and you hadn't been shot at yet and you hadn't, you know, yet been in a firefight. And when it starts, you go, okay, well, it's what I came to do.
Right. That chair, here we
go. Does it get any more real than that? And there's nowhere to go. You can't run from it. So you just got to confront it and just sink your teeth into it. See what happens.
So, anyway, with that, I think we'll tell everybody, we'll hopefully have the next episode recorded earlier and out in the morning. But if not, it'll be out by Monday evening, just like this one. And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.